24/7 from the Voice of America on Friday, August 21st, 2015. And as usual, we'd like to thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemire.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The government designates some of the remaining white-owned commercial farms for compulsory acquisition.
We've got about 300 farmers who are farming on farms, but not necessarily their own full properties like it used to be in the year 2000.
Organizers for the Itai Zamara prayer meeting take the event to the Midlands tomorrow to raise awareness for the missing activist as police fail to locate and deliver him to his family.
We are proceeding to hold the same program in various provinces and strategic areas, and we would want this to be a nationwide program.
And local government minister Sevia Kasukwere blocks the Chinoy municipality from firing 124 workers, saying the local authority is trying to use lowly paid workers as scapegoats for its failures.
These stories and much, much more coming up. Stay tuned. More white-owned farms have been designated for acquisition despite recent assurances by Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa that the remaining 200 or so white-owned farms will be spared from compulsory acquisition. The Zimbabwe Commercial Farmers Union says most of the farms that have been earmarked for acquisition are in Matabeleland South. Chief Executive Officer Hendrik Olivier told Studio 7 the latest designation does not make sense. The farms, he said, are not suitable for crop farming but ranching.
Most are in the Matabeleland area, dry area, predominantly livestock producing areas, no cropping areas. And we see the listing of these properties and throughout the 15 years, we've continued seeing government taking more and more land. And regrettably, we see a lot of land lying idle today and not being utilized.
Do you have an idea of how many white farmers still have their properties?
Yes, I can tell you that we've got about 300 farmers who are farming on farms, but not necessarily their own full properties like it used to be in the year 2000. This is most probably leasing from a friend, or they've downsized considerably where they've got a little plot that they can farm on. Not many are living on the farms any longer. They're probably not allowed to stay there, but they've got access to a land or two. So that is how the commercial farmers at this stage are farming.
Hendrik Olivier is the Chief Executive Officer of the Commercial Farmers of Union of Zimbabwe. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Harare.
A prayer meeting for missing activist Itai Zamara will be held in Mandava Stadium in the Midlands province tomorrow, with the police having so far failed to locate him following a High Court order for them to find him. One of the organizers of the Itai Zamara prayer meetings, Bishop Anselimo Magaya, says they've decided to take the event to other provinces to raise awareness about the missing activist. Magaya says after Midlands, the prayer meeting will be heading to Manicaland and Matabeleland next month. The MDCT party said in a statement today, its leader Morgan Tsvangirai will be among those who will attend the meeting. Magaya says they've also invited other political parties together with civil society organizations.
It's going to be a nationwide program, having started with Harare, Zoom Grounds, and with Uriadzo. We are proceeding to hold the same program in various provinces and strategic areas, and we would want this to be a nationwide program. We are doing this because Itai Zamara is not yet back. He has not been released. His whereabouts are known, and we want to continually appeal to the Most High God, who is the repository of all truth, and God knows the deep and secret things, even that are in the dark. and we are appealing to him. But at the same time, we are making a very clear statement to the powers that be that security of persons is a matter of importance in Zimbabwe.
You used to have problems with the police clearing you. Did you get the clearance this time?
Yeah, we hope they will give us a clearance. But you see, when we notify them, we are not requesting and asking for clearance.
That was Bishop Anselmo Magaya, one of the organizers of the Itaidz Amara prayer meetings.
A local government minister, Xavier Kasukuwere, has blocked the Chinoy municipality from laying off 124 workers, among them two heads of departments. In a letter dated 20 August 2015, signed by Chinoy town clerk Mungororo Mazai, the council noted that it was not dismissing the 124 workers, but terminating their contracts. He said the local authority was basically exercising its right under common law for either the workers or the employer to terminate employment contracts on notice. The fired workers told to stop coming to work immediately and to surrender all council property in their possession, but Kasukuwere said he was having none of that. He told Studio 7 the same rules he applied to the Harare City Council in stopping them from firing employees apply to all local authorities in the country. Kasukuwere said councils will not be allowed to use the workers as scapegoats and firing lowly paid workers when the bosses who are enjoying big packs are left alone.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
economists urge the government to put its act together to avert a disaster as the economy continues to falter.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Macedonia announced today that it would allow in a limited number of illegal migrants from vulnerable categories after riot police confronted angry crowds of migrants stranded in a no man's land at the border with Greece.
Voters in 25 districts in Haiti will have a chance to cast their votes for lawmakers again following the violence that marred the parliamentary elections on August 9.
Prosecutors in Azerbaijan have demanded that an award-winning investigative journalist be sentenced to 9 years in prison on charges she and her supporters say are false and politically motivated. You are listening to Studio 7, coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington, D.C.
In our final piece in our week-long series looking at the country's struggling economy, economic and political analysts say Zimbabwe is headed for social and political instability unless the government speedily addresses the worsening economic situation. Ivan Chifera reports from Harare.
A SNEP survey on the streets of Harare found that the majority of the people on the street consider the current economic situation in Zimbabwe as very bad, and it is not surprising as the economy continues to plummet. The country's economy has been plunging since 2013, with more than 4,000 companies closing down and thousands of workers losing their jobs. In recent weeks, more than 20,000 people have been thrown on the streets following a Supreme Court ruling allowing employers to fire workers on 3 months' notice. More people are getting poorer, with the middle class no longer in existence, and the situation is getting dire. Analysts say the situation, if not properly managed, could lead to a disaster and instability. Former Treasury Chief Economist Masimba Manyanya says the ZANU-PF government has clearly failed to manage its macroeconomics, adding everything in Zimbabwe is pointing towards a disaster of proportions.
But if you are having an economic crisis, you are setting a precedent for social instability and certainly political instability. In other words, what I'm saying is, unless that present crisis is addressed, we cannot safely say that by the end of the year or into next year, the social and political situation will be what it is today.
With dissatisfaction mounting, he says, social groups, political parties, peasants, and opposition political parties could join hands in frustration and put things in their own hands as they feel neglected by a government they think is increasingly selfish.
Within a very short space of time, you have outbreaks of violence and crime in the country. And then with the sort of political polarization we have in the country, you have a scenario where people in the rural areas will have to learn to overcome their fear, and then there will be retributions, you'll be reprisals, then the social and political situation in the country just literally falls apart. We have to find funds now to get into the country so that some of those issues can be avoided.
Another economist, Kipson Gundani, says all economic indicators are pointing the negative way, adding, this is not good for the country. According to him, Zimbabwe's economy suffers from a declining business confidence, especially with foreign investors shunning the Southern African nation.
Economies are run by interaction of several economic agents which behave in a certain way. And because there is a confidence deficit overhang that has been in existence for a number of years, you find that there is no coherence in terms of thinking. Even if you look at investor perception and confidence in the economy is low, as a result, we are not getting what we should be getting to re-jump the economy.
He adds, Zimbabwe desperately needs an injection of foreign direct investment to create new jobs. International business has constantly said lack of security of their investment worries them, resulting in them holding on tight to their purses. Main opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai of the Movement for Democratic Change says the country's economy can only be revived when Harare starts running credible elections whose results won't be disputed and are acceptable to the outside world.
You have a situation where the economy is imploding. We have a situation where the government and the potential of Zimbabwe is being wasted because it is isolated internationally.
Political analyst Fortune Gwaze agrees with Tsvangirai that it is difficult for an economy to thrive in a political crisis. Economists say while countries in Europe that faced economic crisis since the world wars and to date, like Greece for example, had been pulled out by neighbors and the international community, Zimbabwe is unlikely to enjoy such benefits as its leadership has been pouring scorn on the West in their dispute over the so-called targeted sanctions and related issues. Zimbabwe's strained relations with larger donor countries like the United States and Britain is also failing to service its debt with international financial institutions such as the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, meaning it cannot access any funding from them to revive its economy. But they say Zimbabwe has all the resources that it requires to turn around the economy, adding all that is required are policies that attract and protect investment. Economist Nyasham Chichwa of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe says the country's leadership have enough at their disposal to turn the fortunes of the country.
What is important for Zimbabwe, it's having the right policies and being consistent in our policies. If we can do that, it's easy to turn around Zimbabwe. We have the best environment for agriculture. It's basically, you can grow almost everything in Zimbabwe because of the climate we have. We, in terms of the natural resources, we have almost everything. So first and foremost, by putting the right policies and being consistent to those policies, Zimbabwe can grow and can be just like the Asian tigers.
In its book, Pro Poor and Inclusive Development in Zimbabwe, Beyond the Enclave, the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions says the government must borrow strategies that were applied in Asian countries to encourage investment in export sectors and paving way for the new industries, among many others. The Asian Tigers also ensured they had strong, capable, credible and well-committed government and strong political leadership, and the results have been open for all to see as their citizens enjoy a much better life in thriving economies. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
And in sports news, Zimbabweans, being the soccer lovers that they are, have been eagerly waiting for the game between the Mighty Warriors and the Ivory Coast. But much to their chagrin, the Sunday 2016 Rio Olympic preliminary competition African Zone third round second leg match seems to be hanging by a thread as premiership action continues. Reporter Michael Cariati gives us the story.
By this afternoon, the elephants had not yet arrived in Harare, raising questions whether they were coming at all. The elephants had also not informed the Zimbabwe Football Association on whether they would fulfill the fixture as a guessing game on their arrival continues. The Mighty Warriors failed to fulfill their own side of the bargain, but FIFA ordered the second leg to be played after the elephants had also failed to come to Harare for the second leg. There seems to be a breakdown of communication between the two footballing authorities, throwing the two nations' 2016 Rio Olympic preliminary competition Africa Zone third round second leg match in doubt. Zimbabwe Women's Football Administrator Teresa Maguraushe yesterday told the media that despite having written to the Ivory Coast Football Association twice a day every day, requesting their itinerary, they had not received any response. However, Castle Lager Premier Soccer League action continues to swing and rolls into week 20. The week 20 showdown provides yet another test of character for under fire former Warriors coach Sande Chidzambwa. Yes, struggling ZPC Kariba are on the road to On Fire FC Platinum, who are unbeaten in 11 matches. Noben Mapeza's side are now in fourth position with 34 points from 19 games, 1 point behind joint second place Triangle and Dynamos. On the other end, ZPC Kariba are in 12th position, just one slot above the relegation zone, and have not won a league match in 8 games since Chidzambwa took over. However, Chidzambwa does not agree with the much-held view that Castle Lager Premier action is proving too much for him.
I don't think things have been difficult for me in the Premier League. We still have to soldier on, fight until the end of the season, and we'll see what will happen.
Dynamos too are on the road to Bulawayo for a game against Cholocho Pirates. After their 2-0 away win at Gibo Stadium against Triangle, coach Tondera Indiraya fancies his team's chances against the new boys who are struggling to survive.
We are Dynamos. We've got to be very strong if we want to stay with the top teams there at the top. It's another tough encounter, but I think my guys will fight very hard, and perhaps we can get a result there.
Highlanders lost out 2-0 to FC Platinum at home yesterday, but coach Bongani Mafu says it is not back to the drawing board, but to the field when his team travel to Gweru to face Wawa at Ascot.
We don't have a choice. We have to go and dust up and pick it up, go back to the field and work.
Top of the table, Chicken Inn are favoured for maximum points at home to Wange. The other matches are as follows. Harare City versus Buffaloes, Flame Lily versus Chapungu, Capes United versus Dongo, and Haumine are at home to Triangle. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
Still in sports news, Tennis Zimbabwe says it is impressed with the performance of its players at the International Tennis Federation Under-18 tournament currently underway at the Harare Sports Club. Participants at the tournament are drawn from Africa and Europe. Cliff Nokwara of Tennis Zimbabwe says he is hopeful Zimbabwe will make it to the finals Saturday.
We are in the third week now, which is the final week of the 3-week event. We have participants or players from all over the world. We have lots from Southern Africa, lots from other African countries, including Egypt, Cote d'Ivoire, Ghana, Mauritius, Morocco, and lots of European countries also, the likes of England, France, Belgium, Germany. We also have players from India. And as far as Brazil in America.
How would you say Zimbabwe is faring at the tournament?
One of our players had a good outing in the first week, getting through to the finals of the boys section. The second week was quite tough, particularly the draw for our players. They didn't excel in that. Our best result was quarterfinals. But we are also hopeful the final week, which is an elevated or a bigger tournament, we're hoping our boys and girls will do us proud. And I'm hopeful there will be a Zimbabwean player in the finals on Saturday.
How important is it, would you say, for Zimbabwe to be involved in such international tournaments?
These events are used particularly to groom players to partake in professional tennis. Winners of these are serious contenders to participate in WTA and ATP events. Also, this is also part of the development project.
That was Cliff Nokwara of Tennis Zimbabwe speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanga Nyawuye from Harare.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will lead discussions about struggling pensioners in the country.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
In news that we are just receiving, the Alpha Media Holdings Group that publishes the Standard newspaper, The Independent, and The Newsday has fired an undisclosed number of senior journalists, taking advantage of a Supreme Court ruling that allows to fire workers on 3 months' notice. This despite the fact that lawmakers have passed the Labour Amendment Bill in retrospect to protect workers who have been going home with nothing despite working for years for some companies. The bill is now waiting President Mugabe's signature to become law. We'll give you more on this story tomorrow.
For years, Zimbabwean authorities have protected the country's musicians, forcing radio stations to dedicate at least 75% of their airtime to local content. The policy, introduced at the height of the ruling ZANU-PF's frosty relations with the West, was meant to ensure that Zimbabweans listened to local artists instead of foreigners. The policy was also meant to ensure that the rights of musicians were protected against exploitation. Despite all these efforts, foreign music still dominates airplay in Zimbabwe. But one thing the policy could not guarantee was a breakthrough for the local artists on the international arena, as Zimbabwean musicians struggle to penetrate international platforms as compared to Nigerian and Ugandan musicians who now own the international stage. A visiting Mandela Washington fellow Tato Mochone, on attachment with Studio 7, spoke with prominent Zimbabwean music producer Zenzele Ndebele about the issue.
Well, you will find that basically that has always been the case with most African countries, that I think it starts locally. You find that if you look at Zimbabwe, most radio stations in Zimbabwe will play more international music than local content. Currently, the law says at least the radio station should play 60% of local music. Well, it has helped to have Zimbabwean music played locally, but you still find that international music dominates.
Do you think the quality of Nigerian and Ugandan music is superior to Zimbabwean quality of music?
Well, I have listened to some music that is good quality. I do listen to some music from Uganda, Nigeria, that is not so good quality, but it's superior. At the end of the day, it depends who plays the music. It depends. You know, Nigerians and Ugandans have managed to break into the African market first before the international market. If you listen to when there's Big Brother Africa, the music that is being played is Nigerian music. in most movies that are in African movies, and that is Nigerian music that is being played. So I have never, hardly do you hear Zimbabwean music in Big Brother Africa. Hardly do you see a Zimbabwean video, unless Zimbabwean musicians actually start distributing their videos on those channels, then Africans will not know about them. Better on investing the universal market. So I think yes, quality matters, but also availability.
Visiting Mandela Washington fellow Tato Mochone on attachment with Studio 7, speaking there with prominent music producer Zenzele Ndebele.
Still on the same note of music, that is, Mazoe South Member of Parliament Fortune Chazi, a former Deputy Justice Minister who fell victim to factional fighting in ZANU-PF that saw the ouster of former Vice President Joyce Mujuru and a number of other senior party officials, says he's going into full-time music. Chasi, who is the Parliamentary Legal Committee chairperson, has so far released two Zim Denzel songs with Killer T and Gatsby Warrior. Chasi speaks to Studio 7's Blessing Zulu about his new gig.
Is an undertaking that I'm going to be involved on a permanent basis. I found that the scope for me to be doing this is very exciting, in that I'm working with youngsters who need help. They're being a drug problem. Some of these youth are using drugs. So it takes Bronco and all these other funny substances. They also need mentoring in terms of financial management and also their own business management. So I share ideas with them and try and help shape their future and their lives.
Remember first time, yet I can go over time. Go on, I can both criticize, but still take a rumba, take a singing in a pie. I'm about to think the man of a pastor. I see how we invite the chirasta. Go on, I can tell you that I think I'm going back, but still, I can sing it in a pie.
So your venturing into music was not prompted by the alleged factionalism in the ruling ZANU-PF party?
Oh, no, there's nothing implicit or explicit in the music that I'm singing which has anything to do with that type of thing. And if you listen to Killer T, he also says, I'm a group, I'm a full-fledged Zimbabwean, and that is my interest.
You recorded two singles featuring Killer T, of course, and also Gatsby Warrior. When did you first do your recording?
The first recording we did it sometime last year. I did this with Gatsby Warrior. Both him and I were extremely impressed by the quality of the music that we produced. In the same year, around June, July, I had this collaboration with the man of the moment, Chairman Killer T. Unfortunately, all of us were very busy. I was in government then and also carrying out academic studies, and they were also very busy with the local and international shows. So when we found the space, July, August, we had the opportunity to complete our project.
So are we likely to see Honorable Chasi hitting the music scene with live shows?
Yes, definitely. There's no going back on this blessing. I spend most of my time with the youngsters in the ghetto, and I have the opportunity to impart ideas. But they are also my musical mentors. The plan is that by Christmas, we hit the market with a Stormy album that should hit the street. And as any musician would like to do, I will, of course, perform live shows locally. And the plan is that by mid-2016, we should be in our inaugural maiden tour, possibly in the UK, but we see a great market in South Africa, the United Kingdom, Australia, the United States, everywhere where our people have gone to, that we are going to spread the Zim dance or gospel to every corner of the world.
That there was the Mazoe South Member of Parliament, Fortune Chasi.
absconded government duty and you went to attend a Thomas Mapfumo show in South Africa. Is this true?
No, I'm a very hardworking person, a very loyal person, and I was very dedicated to my government responsibilities. The people who came up with that idea probably don't like him, Kanye. Unfortunately for me, I have no
We have run out of time. That was Fortune Chasi, Member of Parliament, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu. That's all for tonight. Good night.